You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to Weekly, a show where we recap the week on Eurogamer for you. We dig into the reviews and features and whisk through the news and videos, highlighting some of the standout things you might have missed. Remember, premium supporters of Eurogamer get these episodes on Friday, making it a very handy end-of-week digest. Everyone else listens from Monday, and you can find out more about supporting Eurogamer on the website or below. Joining me on Weekly today are Editor-in-Chief Martin Robinson. Bonjour, Martin.
Hello.
And reviews editor Chris Tapsell. Bonjour, Christophe.
Bonjour, Robert.
Let's start with arguably the biggest talking point of the week, which is the relaunched PlayStation Plus, which I know, Chris, you've been spending a lot of time with. And I imagine, Martin, you've been spending some time with too. For those listening, if you didn't know, Sony's overhauled its offering and broken PlayStation Plus now into three tiered levels. There's now PlayStation Plus Essential, which is effectively what PlayStation Plus was before. You get two free monthly games, discounts, cloud storage, that sort of stuff. And there's also PlayStation Plus Extra and Premium. Taps, you tell us a bit more about these levels, please.
So like you said, the basic one is Essential, which is just like a standard PS Plus, and then Extra is you get what they call the games catalog, which is lots of games. And then premium, you get the games catalog and the essential stuff, plus a classics catalog, and then some other sort of smaller things. So like you get access to some demos and cloud streaming.
So so the extra is a bit like Game Pass. Is that right? You get loads of PS5 and PS4 games.
Yeah. I would say so, yeah. They're really hard to compare because you have two different types of Game Pass where it's like just the console or just PC and then Ultimate, and Ultimate bundles in more stuff, and there's cloud streaming is kind of in there, and they're across different tiers. But basically, yeah, the one that in your head you're thinking, which is the Game Pass one, that's basically extra. And then premium is just kind of that with a few nice bits on top. You basically get the retro games is the main thing with premium.
And how is it? What did you think of it?
I think it's quite weird. basically, it's all right. Like it's similar-ish to Game Pass. It's a similar sort of price. I think depending on which tier you go, it's like slightly cheaper or slightly more expensive. You get a similar amount of stuff, broadly speaking.
It's quite a lot of games. I was reading it. Something like 800 games or something.
Yeah, it's loads of games. Dare I say it, I think it's too many games because there's a lot of stuff in there that I don't want to say nobody cares about because that's mean and because people work on these
are
games.
You slight, are you? Is this a slight on Pixar's Brave?
Listen, it's a slight on apparently every Pixar film and all of its video game tie-ins, which seem to be in this catalog.
I was going to say, don't trash Greg Hastings' Paintball.
Yeah, Greg Hastings Paintball 2, just to be clear. I don't know if the first one's on there because there's a weird issue with the catalogs where the catalog screen, which you think is a list of all the games, actually isn't a list of all the games. There are some that only appear when you search for them, but you can't search for them from that screen. You have to go to a different screen to search for games within PS Plus.
It is a bizarre. The whole thing's been like from the rollout, from the initial rumors even, when it was like Project Spartacus, the whole thing seems just a bit confused. Like, you can't fault it for its generosity, as you say. It's like, it's a wonderful selection of games. It's actually quite good value. You pay for pay the top tier and you get a wealth of games. But everything about it is just a bit incoherent and a bit confused. Like, I mean, when they announced it and there was like about six different asterisk points at the bottom. It's like the caveats are just as long as your arm, basically. And sitting down with it as well, it's just it's not, it doesn't have the key, it doesn't have the cohesiveness, basically. It's not quite coherent, and it just shows up like, I get a lot of it. One of the my big takeaway from it, because obviously being an old man, my first thing I did was just download Jumping Flash. And it's like, it's great that I can play these and it's wonderful that it works, but it just shows that Sony's approach to backwards compatibility, just, it ain't it, is it? It's just like, it's not quite there, because it's just all these weird games, not the ones you really want, presented in not a particularly satisfying way, with some games not working as they should, and so everything.
It's streaming, right? You stream these old games.
Well, it depends.
Yeah.
PS3 games are streamed. I think probably because of difficulty of I'm not a DF here, but I think the difficulty of obviously emulating what is a notoriously unique machine. And PS1 and PS2 are kind of native apps, although the PS2 ones are the games that were those like PS2 classics arrived on PlayStation 4. They are not particularly great ports. The PS1 games are, I think, newish in terms of the ports. They have like save states and rewind features and stuff like that. I think trophies in some cases as well. And so they're slightly better, but the selection's not great. And so, yeah, it is all sort of all over the place. And is the streaming... I did actually try the streaming, actually. I played bizarrely Papineau. I don't know why I played Papineau. But just... and the streaming did... It worked. Like, it was fine. It was good enough, basically. And it was an okay experience of an okay video game.
What have you been playing? What caught your eye? What is it exciting to see that's on the service? What did you go to first?
I'm going to feel really ungrateful for saying this, because of the first thing, like, you get given 800 games and I feel so awful. Like, the first thing you say is like, well, why is that not there? Because I was really looking forward to, like Ridge Racers or some PSP stuff. Some of the more out there stuff. So I haven't played that. I went straight to the PS1 classics, basically, and Jumping Flash and Kurushi, I think it is, which I've played all of 10 minutes of, so I need to actually work out how it works. But it's a kind of, it's those cult classics which make it worthwhile.
Yeah. Straight to Trash Panic for me.
Yeah, it's exactly that. Yeah, it's exactly what it's for.
I kind of didn't know where to start with it. The good thing for me was that, so I'm using like the office PS5, and so we sort of swap it around and stuff like that. So I haven't consistently had a PS5 at my place for a few months now. So for me, it was nice to just go, okay, this is almost like unwrapping a new console and having a load of games for it. And you can, I suppose it's the classic target audience thing of what these services are supposed to be for, where I can just boot it up. I've got my subscription, which was just converted from PS Plus that I already had to the premium tier. And I went straight to all of the really sort of obvious basic blockbusters. But just like, the Demon's Souls remaster and Miles Morales and stuff like that. These are games I didn't get to play at launch because I didn't have a PS5 in that launch window. Someone else was using it. So straight away, I can play stuff that I can imagine I would have spent 70 quid on if I was a punter. And then they probably would have sat in my backlog for a bit, because I'm an idiot, and then eventually got around to them, and instead they've been added to my backlog for free. So I do really like having those. The weirdness for me is that a lot of really good stuff that fills that sort of area in the market, I suppose, is already included in the PS Plus collection, which it comes with the basic tier that everyone already had. I think it launched around the time of the PS5 or with the PS5, where you got like a load of really good PS4 games for free for PS5. And so I've seen pictures going around on Twitter of people being like, wow, yeah, I can't wait to get stuck in, and they're showing a list of the downloads, and it's a load of stuff that was in the PS Plus collection. But because it's all jumbled in this weird way, you don't really know what you already had and what you didn't. And there's three different types of word they use to show that you've owned the game, and you don't quite know what is... When did I get this? Did I already have this? Do I get it now? Do I download it? It's all very weird, but for me, blockbusters, basically.
Has Sony made any kind of commitment to putting first-party games on the service when they launch?
They've made a commitment to not do that. So, yeah. But I think it's they haven't been. I could be wrong. I hope I'm not. I don't think they've been transparent about when stuff will be hitting it. But I think it looks like it's about a year, doesn't it? I think from when it comes out, I think that's what it looks like from what's in the initial lineup and what's missing. And so they want to maintain the big prestige titles for £70 a pop, for obvious reasons, and don't want to. That's their business model. That's what they want to go for, and that's what they're sticking with. And so, like, you're not going to get when God of War Ragnarok comes out later this year. You're not going to get that day and date. It'll be next November. I think it's something along those lines. Sorry if I'm wrong. Yeah,
that's slightly disappointing to me, but I get why they're doing it. Just quickly, what are the demos that you mentioned? What are they like? Are they just pretty unexciting? It seems odd that you have to pay $13.50 or something it is a month to get demos.
I think the biggest one is probably Horizon Forbidden West is on there, and some other ones. I think it's basically the games that they haven't added to the service yet.
Okay.
So probably God of War, probably get one. I think am I right in saying that they added sort of a mandate for games on the platform that they all have to have like a 2-hour demo? I don't know if it's just first party ones or not.
Yeah, I don't know if it's first party or not, but there was a mandate for to have that demo in there. So it is actually quite good to get a big chunk of games you can play for 2 hours and then.
Yeah, you can get about as far as the title screen in a modern AAA game with that. It's good. It's weird because I'm in a weird position now in this industry where you don't think about demos as much as I used to, whereas as a punter, a demo is actually quite useful, and I really enjoy the days of like getting a demo disc with a magazine, or I played like one of the Tomb Raider demos, you know, like 5 times start to finish as a kid, like every kid does that, right? Trying to find a way to break into the rest of the game. So I think they will be appreciated. I don't think I would pay to access them though. For me, kind of the nature of a demo is that it is free.
It is a nice welcome bonus, because I'd actually completely forgotten about that side of the offering. And then all of a sudden, and as someone who hasn't yet forked out £70 for Horizon, I was like, oh, actually have been meaning to give that a shout. And so I might it was a nice additional part of the service, I think.
Quite exciting as well that there's competition now in that space. Microsoft's Game Pass has some competition, even though they're slightly different. And it sounds like there's a little bit of work to do on the PlayStation Plus just to clean it up a bit, tidy it up. Any sign of Nintendo bolstering?
Well, I was going to say, it feels like this is it's good, some competition finally for Nintendo Switch Online, because it's gone. No one's been able to knock it off its perch for so long. No, I don't think Nintendo's going to change anything. Like, Nintendo's offering is so different. I would say this because of I'm surrounded in a shed full of amiibos, and I'm a tragic person who really likes Nintendo. But Nintendo Switch Online isn't an alternative to these kind of things. It's a very different kind of service. It's not great, but it's not terrible either.
Awesome. Okay, let's move on. So let's look at some of the reviews that were on the site this week. And Chris, we'll start with you with a game called Milky Way Prince, the Vampire Star, which I kind of have no idea what this game is. I think it sounds quite art house, quite eclectic anyway. But what is it?
It is a visual novel about actually something very serious. It's about a relationship between two young men who both have different sort of mental health issues that they're wrestling with. One of them, I think, has borderline personality disorder, the person you sort of fall in love with. And there is a lot of very, very heavy subject matter in there, which was intense. It's only like a 2-3 hour game. It's really short. It's sort of replayable. There's like branching narratives. So I think that basically the nature of the game is that you're playing as this kid, Nuki, I think the name is, and you sort of immediately fall very intensely in love with this guy who sort of appears out of nowhere. And you have this very romantic idea in your head of what kind of the relationship is going to be like and what they're like. And they are not really like that. They're quite sort of cold, and you are essentially trying to. You're almost trying to crack the puzzle of this person. So you're trying to choose these dialogue options to convince them to, you know, not do something quite awful. It's things like content warning, things like self harm, and that sort of thing. It's a very strange way of sort of displaying that. What struck me was just how I put it in the review was the technique of The guy who made it, whose name is escaping me, I'm really sorry. It's one Italian developer and a small sort of support team, so like a little micro studio. And it's very clever things, like just playing with, for instance, like multiple choice dialogue. Sometimes you'll get like a massive page of different things you can say. Sometimes you're locked into just one. Sometimes you have to kind of like hammer the button a load of times to get it through. Sometimes they're fading away as you're picking them. There are also very clever bits of sort of twists on it where, for instance, before you have sex, which happens several times during it, there's this kind of mantra of the other guy asking you several questions, and they begin as quite sort of endearing things. You know, it's like, you promise you'll always love me and stuff like that, and it almost feels like you're sort of checking for consent, and it's quite a nice sort of rhythmical thing that you go through. As the story evolves and your relationship becomes more sort of toxic and harmful, the phrasing of it ever so slightly changes, so it becomes a bit more manipulative and then more coercive, to the point where it almost feels like you're being coerced into saying these things and you're not really consenting. You can never do anything other than say I do at the end of everything. It's just very clever little things like that that are quite subtle, on top of things that are not subtle, where they're very in your face, almost jump scary visual things that happen. It was really remarkable. It really is remarkable. I think if you're okay with that subject matter, I appreciate why some people definitely wouldn't be. If you are okay with it and you're okay with something only short, I really, really recommend it.
It sounds
it's stunning.
Fascinating. I love the sound of what they've done with multiple choice answers, which is usually a mechanic just kind of repeated. Take a BioWare game, for instance, and you know the framework of it so well. You know that this answer represents this, this answer represents this, that you're almost asleep at the helm when you're answering these questions. But I like that they're saying more about the content matter through the mechanic of like fading answers, or like you say, like you have to hammer the answer to get it into that person's head.
Yeah,
sounds fascinating. And do they treat? It sounds like it could be quite a personal kind of subject matter. I don't know anything about the developer. Do they treat the subject matter with care, with understanding? Is it?
I think so. It's hard for me to say because, you know, I haven't experienced those things or that type of relationship even. So it's always very hard to judge that too definitively. For me, it felt like it was, I guess, like an examination of it. It was very much a case of showing the harm that can happen from it. And I suspect the sort of the way that if two people who are sort of wrestling with similar issues end up in a relationship together, it can create sort of a bit of a supernova where you can spiral a little bit. And so, yes, I think so. I mean, ultimately, the point of games like this is sort of putting things out there that aren't usually talked about or represented. I'm sure people will have questions about if it's represented perfectly or not.
Sure.
I think to an extent, just the fact that it's exploring it in quite a thoughtful way, regardless of how necessarily positive a depiction it is of it, I think that has merit on its own. But that's a very difficult one to fully answer, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, thanks for explaining. It does sound fascinating. Moving on to a game that's quite different, Fire Emblem Warriors Three Hopes, which we called one of the strongest Musou, I think I've pronounced that right, games yet. Martin, I think you're a bit of a Musou game fan. I might be labeling you here, but can you tell us what a Musou game is?
It's basically like an evolution of the old fighting games, but you're given a big map and you've got to clear it up, basically. It's like most basic form. It's just going in and capturing camps and clearing them of enemies until you claim them and then just sweeping the map. And so it's quite, I find them quite relaxing and therapeutic because it's quite basic fighting action, 3D fighting action. So it's not exactly like your kind of Devil May Cry kind of thing. It's much more stripped back than that. And the joy of it is basically just looking at the map, figuring out where you've got to clear up next, basically, and then going and wiping out. At times, obviously, it's the one thing I still love about that drew me to them when I first played them, which was with, I can't remember which one, it was one of the GameCube ones, one of the lesser ones. But it's just the kill count in the bottom corner, which tends to go up into the thousands after about 8-9 minutes, you've already like wiped out 1,000 people. So it's like quite a power fantasy combined with just how therapeutic it is, just tied clearing a map up, basically.
There's a ridiculousness to them, isn't there? Where
yeah.
it's like a movie or something where there's no pretense at making it realistic or realism. They've just gone, right, one swipe is going to, you know, take down a line of enemies or an army. It's one person.
Yeah, it's a beautiful... The mob clearance as well, just going in and clearing like mobs of 30 and 40 people and seeing them fly high in the air. Like that's, it hasn't like, the basic formula hasn't really changed that much since it was kind of introduced in the early noughties. And I don't think it really needs to. And so I kind of like, some people are quite sniffy about them, I think, because of that, because of it's like, oh, there's so many of these games that aren't they all the same. But then when you play them, it's like, yeah, there's a reason there's so many of them. It's because they're really, really, really satisfying to play and really enjoyable. And, the Nintendo themed ones, there's obviously been quite a lot of them now. We've had the Hyrule Warriors, an Age of Calamity as well, and this is the second Fire Emblem Musou game. And they work really well. I'm not sure if it's kind of Nintendo bringing a bit of quality control to it, which might not be there sometimes in the mainline entries. Dynasty Warriors, was it the open world one? 8 was like it wasn't great. So it's kind of, you've got that that quality control, and also just they handle the IP really well. And in Fire Emblem's case, say I'd add like a strategic layer to it, basically, whereby you can switch between characters, and you've got the weapon triangle of Fire Emblem that's quite famous, and it's got that kind of strategic layer under it, which helps bring it home, basically. I've not actually played Three Hopes yet, I should say. Henry did a wonderful job of reviewing it, a good enough job that I'm going to buy it today. but yeah, they're fantastic things, and I do understand the reticence about them, but. If you just like mashing things up and having a relaxing time, it's like the opposite of Milky Way Star Prince, basically. Like that is a challenging game to play that you like. I can't imagine you're like, oh, I've had a really hard day at work. I want to sit back and unwind. I want to play this really challenging game about quite difficult issues. Whereas this is like an antithesis of it. It's just like switch your mind off and just go and yeah, it's I'd say mindless, but it's yeah. Therapeutic, I think is probably the best way to describe it.
Okay, let's move on to some features. Martin, coming back to you again. So you had a good old chat with Battlefield 2042 developer DICE, which was fighting fires again. It seems they like making life difficult for themselves. And they seem pretty candid about how the launch of the game went. How was that? How was the interview?
It was good. I think that, so it was clear that obviously there had been rumours going around that DICE had effectively moved off of Battlefield 2042 and was already working, already had the majority of the team working on the new Battlefield game. And this is clear that this is kind of a PR beat intended to just basically say, we really haven't moved on. Loads of people are working on this. And so that was the intention behind it from their end. And I think I do buy it. Like they are, the game has come on a long way. The season one came 8 months after the game came out, its first season started. But it did bring a new map, which is really good. I'm optimistic about the future of Battlefield, although it's obviously not the first time this has happened.
DICE always seemed really good to me at clearing up the issues after launch. They add loads of stuff to the games, like the Battlefront games in particular. They added loads of stuff to it, the Star Wars Battlefront games. But it just can't get the launch right.
Well, yeah, they do a really good job of clearing up their own mess. Basically, but like surely the optimum would be don't make such a mess in the first place. And it's quite a radical overhaul they've had of the leadership team, like quite some heads rolled, it seems, after Battlefield 2042's release. And they've got some serious big hitters working on the series now. Marcus Leto, who you know from Halo, and what I forgot what his game was that came out a couple of years ago. It went down really well, but no one bought it.
I know what you mean.
Yeah,
the one
thanks.
That was.
That's
yeah,
enough. I don't need to remember what it's called.
It had
that's
like
enough,
a, like
you know
a tactical
mean.
Layer to it, right?
Yeah,
it was kind
yeah.
Of, yeah, yeah.
And Alex Seropian as well, who was kind of one of the original Bungie team, but he's working on the mobile game, and Vince Zampella, Call of Duty creator, working at Ripple on it as well. I think he's just looking over the entire franchise, and so there are some serious names behind it now, and you'd have thought, surely, the next Battlefield. They won't mess up at launch, but I've been saying that I thought that 2042 might be the case, but I thought that was the case after the previews. But I remember the review event for Battlefield 2042, and it was kind of hilarious as it dawned upon everybody playing it what a state this game was in. And it's like, yeah, everyone's like playing the game with the developers kind of in the Discord, and everyone's kind of whispering to each other. It's like, do you think they know how bad it is? Like, do you think they know what's coming? And they must have done. It must have been difficult with them, though, because I know it did seem they had a big change of direction halfway through development. They had COVID happened and sent everyone remote and everything as well. And yeah, a lot of things didn't land, a lot of very questionable design decisions. But yeah, I feel for teams who might be going through that. It must be horrible to spend so much time on a game event, see it get quite rightly ripped apart by the community, because it didn't do what it should have done. But they're making great strides, and I'm looking forward with some optimism to see what they do once they can actually start from the foundations, basically, and get Battlefield back to where it should be. Because Battlefield's such a great series. Like, you're a Battlefield player, aren't you, Taps?
Yeah, a bit lapsed now. I played, I loved Battlefield 3 and played a fair bit of Battlefield 4 and some of the historical ones I played after, like 1 and V a bit, but never really, I didn't properly like click with those. And I haven't played 2042 yet. But I miss it. I miss a shooter that is occupying that in between slot between Call of Duty and the more hardcore, you know, like Armor, that kind of thing. There is very much a gap, a Battlefield-sized gap.
Yeah, totally. That's the thing. Battlefield provides an experience that none of those games can. Yeah. And that's why I like it.
Has a sense of fun to me, where the other games seem a bit intense on the competition. There's just something so slapstick fun about Battlefield.
It's got chaos. It does chaos brilliantly. And it does comedic chaos brilliantly. Just like the old, like the classic thing of strapping some C4 to a tank, to clapping some C4 to like a Jeep, and then getting some momentum, then driving it towards a camp, and then jumping out at the last minute, and then letting it explode, and then seeing that it's wiping out two or three squads that
with
way,
your friends still in the truck.
But it's got that, and Battlefield 2042's got that now. And it's just, it was kind of lost under some of the more questionable things that happened around launch. With some of the key features missing, but it's there. And like, I play Battlefield 2042 in my spare time by choice. It's my first person shooter of choice. I don't know what that says about me, but because it offers that kind of that slapstick and that carnage which you don't get anywhere else, and it's slowly coming to the fore in 2042. I just really hope they can get the series back to where it should be, because of it. Battlefield should be brilliant. It should be up there with Call of Duty and everything as the primo shooter experience. It's sad that it hasn't been for whatever reason recently.
Okay, let's move on. So the delightful Christian Donlan, who's not with us today, looked at a minimalist city building puzzle game called Tile Cities on PC, which looks great. He also looked at the work of a Canadian artist and graphic novelist called Leanne Shapton, whose books sound brilliant. They're not game books per se, but you can sort of see games within them. And Christian talks about this one where you're flicking through it and there's these photos and there's this guy who keeps popping up in the photographs in like lots of different places. Like, you think maybe they're taken over the course of like 2 years, and you're like, okay, somehow this guy keeps popping up. But then the book reveals that this all takes place over the course of a day or something, and you're like, that's not possible. And so there's this kind of ghost story vibe going through it. And anyway, sounds great. Christian also looked at a demo of this Raw Fury game called Dome Keeper, which sounded kind of cool. It's like a kind of pixelated side-on tower defense or base defense game. You have this dome in the middle, and then these monsters kind of attack it at night. But you expand by digging down and kind of finding, I don't really like resources and stuff, and I guess that powers up your dome at the top and how much you can kind of take on. Reminds me a bit of Kingdom Two Crowns, that game they had, only you don't sort of venture out sideways, you kind of dig down.
That looks so good. I really like the look of that. I was hoping to check it out. I didn't have time, and Donlan snaffled it from under my nose. So I'll be coming for him for a mention of that. But it looks so good.
There are some beautiful lines in there as well. You probably see me trying to bring it up in my glasses, a reflection of me just desperately reading it to remember what's right about it. Like, no, he could like there's a thrillingly bad time, the best kind of awful, which I really loved. Yeah. It's just kind of one of those challenging and grim games, and a different kind of challenging to the obviously what you played this week, Taps. But yeah, it was beautifully described as ever.
It sounds bang up my street.
I love that sense of being overwhelmed and you're just like, ah, all the time, and just scrabbling to try and keep up. The pacing is really important. I looked at the console release of Inkle Studios' Sorcery this week, which is came out on mobile originally in like 2013, then came to PC, but it sort of, no one really noticed. It kind of got overshadowed by 80 Days, which went on to win awards, and then Heaven's Vault came out as their like big project. And because of its like fractured origins, it just kind of got elbowed to the side. And it's really good. It's an adaptation of Steve Jackson's Sorcery game books, which are quite weird and quite brutal, and that's what makes it feel great. And they've, and Inkle have treated it really nicely as well. The only problem is the games are a little old now, and they originated, you know, they were intended kind of for mobile, and it still feels a bit like that when you play it on console, which is fine, like they're playable, but for 20 quid it would have just been nice to see a little bit more effort, some embellishments, just it, because they're nice games. It's like, just put that little bit of work. It's been ported rather than kind of redone a little bit. And is they're still great, still nice experiences, lots of games to play. You carry your adventure right through four parts. It's not as good as it could have been, basically.
Is it still the case, do you think, it's probably best played on mobile as well still? If you're gonna play it on any format, is it best to play
them
on mobile?
Yeah, there's something about the maps. There's this artist called Mike Schley who makes these kind of fantasy maps, and they're just so evocative to look at. And on a mobile screen, on a smaller screen, there's something that looks a bit more delicate about it, whereas it looks a bit blown up on the TV. It doesn't have that same kind of feel. And it feels like it works well enough with the control buttons they've adapted for it, but it still feels like touching it is what's intended. And also, it's massively discounted on Steam at the moment if you wanted to play it that way. The whole lot is £5 rather than £20. So, but I appreciate not everyone has a PC to play it on. But
speaking of mobile, just briefly, actually, and just as a teaser for next week, I just remembered I sat bolt upright in the middle of a night at 3 a.m. and I was like, why have I just woken up? And then realised I'd woken up because of Yu Suzuki's game has just hit Apple Arcade. And I haven't played it yet. I got it downloading and I need to play it today. So yeah. Look forward to hopefully some an Atlas.
I feel like that would wake you up out of your grave if you were under.
it's a new Suzuki game day today, everyone. So yeah, be happy, please.
Be happy. Okay, got to move swiftly on because I'm running out of time here. So in Video Land, Zoe looked at 7 PC horror games that are coming out this year that you need to know about, including Immortality, which is a new game by Her Story creator Sam Barlow, which will be interesting. Ian has got some top tips for playing Sniper Elite 5, which we gave an essential to, so it's amazing. And he also played Fall Guys, if you want to see him being stupid, which I think I do. And Aoife got nerdy about Pokemon Scarlet and Violet and told us everything we need to know about that. Plus, there's more videos, of course. That's just a few of them. Digital Foundry, meanwhile, declared it had a new favorite gaming headset. In the SteelSeries Arctis Nova Pro, which is quite expensive. There's a review for this, by the way. They're £250 wired, £330 wireless, but they come with like their own little portable equalizer thing that you can just carry around with you, almost like a giant pager from the 80s. Oh, it just sounds amazing. And they've got all the bells and whistles and stuff.
I'm not sure if I'm ever out in like the wild though, thinking like cut the mid range, drop the bass. Like, I'm not,
like, I really like the idea of that, just on the bus, like soaring, getting a little bit of too much bass on this.
It's a bit peaking.
Digital Foundry also reviewed a new AMD Ryzen CPU, which I've got in my computer. Not that one. This one's much newer, but. Will Judd can tell you all about it. I'm not even going to pretend to understand why it's over in Newsland, meanwhile, we had a great investigation from Tom Phillips on the Mucky World, pun intended, of Spin Tires, this game about driving around in really realistic mud. I played the original, actually, and the mud is very satisfying to squelch around in. There's a feud going on between this publisher that a small UK publisher that originally published it, and then this company called Saber Interactive, which is where the creator works and worked originally. And it's like, who owns the game? And Ovi, this small publisher, is like, we want to put the game on Steam, but Saber's like, you can't because we own it. And they made some, it goes back and forth. Check the story out on Eurogamer, because Tom did a bigger investigation into this before as well, and he's keeping tabs on it. Meanwhile, Martin, you'll like this one. Sonic creator Yuji Naka apparently used to hang out with Michael Jackson, and who wrote some music for Sonic 3. We know Naka shared a picture, an aerial picture from like taken from a helicopter of him flying over Jackson's Neverland branch. I don't really know what to say about this.
Well, Yuji Naka's basically just taking no prisoners now. Since he left Square Enix after Balan Wonderworld, obviously there was a tweet thread not long ago where he basically said it wasn't the game he wanted it to be. It was a ship kind of unfinished, and basically just called Square Enix. Well, it wasn't particularly nice. It wasn't pleasant to his former employers, and it's like, wow, he's really not taking any prisoners at all. And then now it's Sega's turn. And after the somewhat shoddy release of Sonic Origins, something we haven't covered on the site, unfortunately, yet, because Sega, for reasons which are becoming clearer every day, didn't give us review code. But I think Digital Foundry is going to be on it soon. It's not a great port by any means. In fact, Headcanon have come out just recently to say it's not a great port. And now Yuji Naka has come out and said about the music. It's long been rumoured that Michael Jackson did some of the soundtrack for Sonic 3. Never been officially confirmed for various reasons. People don't know if it's because of copyright, if they have to pay the estate every time they use it, or if it's just, which is probably most likely, that Sega don't want to be associated with a sex offender. I don't know where it stood on convictions or anything, but anyway, he's a dubious character, I think it is fair to say. And so the music had changed for this version of Sonic 3, but Yuji Naka basically confirmed the long-running rumour. In a way, he kind of backtracked a little bit afterwards and said, "I didn't mean to. It wasn't what I said." It's like, but yeah. So I'm not sure if it's fully cleared up the age-old rumour, but it certainly made it a little bit clearer that Michael Jackson did indeed work on those tracks.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited about this new one. The new Plague Tale game, the sequel, Plague Tale Requiem, just got a release date and it's out in October. I think this game is great. Play the original if you haven't. Creative Assembly also revealed its new game. And now this is not the Total War side of Creative Assembly. This is the console team at Creative Assembly, which made Alien Isolation, but which has since grown into a much bigger thing. And it's been working on a game for years. So I'm quite excited to see what they're working on. And it's this multiplayer sci-fi heist shooter called Hyenas, bizarrely enough. And so this is a co-op game for teams of three, it sounded like, which get a heist mission. So they have to break in somewhere, steal something, get away. But at the same time as you're playing, you're apparently also playing against four other teams. I don't know if they're controlled by real people or if it's controlled by the computer. At the same time to try and achieve the same goal. They're not sharing that much more information on this. There's also, it looks like it's kind of class-based. It's quite wacky. It's got 0G, which I don't know how well that works in a shooter when you can't like move quickly to, anyway. And it's got a lot of energy and swagger. Do people say that?
I say that a lot, yeah.
It reminds me a bit of Arcane, the Riot Games series. It's got this similar kind of animation, but that might just be the trailer. And it also reminds me of Overwatch a bit. It's out next year on PC, Xbox, PlayStation.
You didn't say it's Payday in space. That's what it is, though. Yeah. That's what it reminds me of. It's just Payday in space.
See, I took ages to say all that. You could have just said Payday in space. God damn it.
Sorry.
Chris Tapsell, I reckon you've got a hot take on this.
Oh, I was gutted when I saw this. I feel really bad because I think the Creative Assembly people are really good people. But when you hear Creative Assembly working on a shooter and you think about what they did with like Alien Isolation and what the potential they have for something sort of single player and quite contained, and then you get something that to my eyes looks very, very stylistically generic. I think that multiplayer shooters are just so crowded, and you really have to either be backed by an absolutely gigantic, almost infinite marketing budget like Apex Legends and Fortnite, or you are a very niche, almost janky indie game that sort of goes viral because a streamer enjoyed it. I don't know if there's much room for just competent shooters with a good idea and not much else to them. And there's also the fact that the crux of the game is that you're stealing like tat, like you basically you're stealing
like Rubik's cubes,
like swag for because like in it's in the future and the only thing that's worth any money anymore is what billionaires want, which is different types of collectible tat. And so you're fighting over that. So you're basically stealing like Sonic Funko Pops. And I
well, that's me, it's interesting.
For me, that's the most cynical, like very obvious sort of way to bundle some like collaborations with brands into your game, which is just like someone's gone, how can we make Fortnite without it being Fortnite, if you know what I mean? How can I get like the latest Marvel collab in my video game?
It is, but then it's just as contrived in other multiplayer shooters when they're like, you've got you've got to disarm the bomb, or you've got to do this or that. Why not make it something? It's not really the point.
Yeah, but you've the bomb isn't like something sponsored by, you know.
Well, that's like it was. It was not. You know I mean? Yeah, it wasn't what I. It wasn't what I expected. I think it's fair to say. And I'm going to wait until I play it to say too much more about it.
Yeah,
some of it sounds promising to me, and some of it's like.
I want it to be good because I want people to be inventive in this space. I just worry that it won't be.
I take but your point though about it. You need to throw a lot at a multiplayer shooter to get it to stick in some way. And that's just not money up front. That's after the fact. You need to support it with a lot of stuff. You know, you need to keep it present. You need to keep it up the top. And that's tricky. Maybe Creative Assembly can do it, but we haven't seen them do it before, I think. And that's what's a concern.
I'm not a billionaire, but I did actually quite like some of the references because it had the Sonic Bauble it had in there, a little dangling Sonic Bauble, was from, I think, from Radmobile. And I'm not sure if you know, but what was Sonic the Hedgehog's first ever video game appearance?
Oh, my God.
Sonic the Hedgehog. It was Radmobile.
Was it Donkey Kong?
Donkey Kong.
It was Donkey Kong. But I quite like that stuff because I'm a Sega nerd, and I quite like little things like that popping up. But yeah, I am interested to play it.
Okay, we've run over slightly, so I'm going to rattle through these as quick as humanly possible. So there's a remaster of the 1997 Blade Runner game. It's finally complete. It came out yesterday. This is the Night Dive Studios remaster. It doesn't look that different to me, but the performance has been cleaned up a lot. That's all we're going to say about that. No Man's Sky is coming to Switch in October, but it's going to be single player only at launch. There's a Cyberpunk 2077 board game called Gangs of Night City, and it smashed its Kickstarter goal already with like 2 weeks to go. 80 grand was its goal. It's raised $250,000 already, so it's doing really well. The next World of Warcraft expansion is coming this year. It's called Dragonflight. It doesn't have a specific date yet, but I'd bet on September. Blizzard is also releasing Overwatch 2 this year in early access on 4th of October, with the PvE part to follow next year. And it has just released its Diablo Immortal game, which apparently made £20 million in 2 weeks, which sounds like a success. It's quite good, I found, when I was playing from it. But of course, Activision Blizzard still has lots of other stuff going on. Still reeling from those allegations of sexual harassment, assault, and all that kind of stuff. That's all continues with lots of lawsuit-related updates and things every week, it seems. While we're talking about Blizzard quickly, actually, there was once, apparently, according to Tony Hawk, no less, going to be a Pro Skater 3 and 4, but these plans were scrapped when developer Vicarious Visions was merged into Blizzard. Boo.
Skate 4 is coming out this year, though, still. So, hey, no, it was being revealed this year, so we've still got that. Hold on to that.
Someone made Elden Ring look like a SNES game, and I was watching the video for this, and it's adorable. Someone made a 2-centimeter-thick PlayStation 5 Slim, all of their own, and it's adorable. And Chris Pratt says his Mario movie voice will be unlike anything we've heard in Mario before, which is it's not adorable.
I'm concerned.
Yeah. What's he going to do?
He's going to swear.
Yay! Brilliant.
Is he going to go all gruff and like just take it not cute? He's going to go completely the other way.
I think it's just going to sound like Chris Pratt.
Yep.
It's a me, Mario.
I'm Starla, I'm Mario. Anyway, that's it for this week. Thank you, Martin and Chris, for joining me.
Thank you so much
for
having us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Bertie. This was Weekly. Don't forget to follow us, and we'll be back next week. Bye for now.
Bye-bye. Bye.